WDRBY, Roller Derby Radio, is proud to present Q-Tips with Electrocution, legendary player for the Carolina Roller Girls. Send your questions in right now to electrocution at carolinarollergirls.com. That's ELEKTRAQTION at carolinarollergirls.com. And now, get ready for Electrocution, only on WDRBY, Roller Derby Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Wednesday's night. You're on with Q's Tips, and this is Electrocution of the Carolina Roller Girls. You can reach me at electrocution at carolinarollergirls.com, or you can find me on Facebook under Renee Q McHugh, because Facebook stole my name and still hasn't given it back. My guest tonight is Uncle Paul. He's our coach from the Carolina Roller Girls. He's amazing. Say hello, Uncle Paul.
Hello.
And just to refresh everybody, what do you do and how did you get involved in roller derby?
Well, I coach. Yeah. I announce sometimes. Do jam timing last month. Some jam timing. Whatever needs to be done.
You're a man of many hats, right?
Yeah. And Trudy got me involved.
Yes. So Trudy Destruction, who has one of the best derby names I've ever heard in my life. She found you. You were doing radio station stuff.
Yep.
Right.
And she came up to promote. It was the Brandywine game.
Yes, it was.
And she asked if I would be, instead of being an announcer.
Mm-hmm. So. And then you got roped into coaching.
Yeah, because I was going to practice a lot.
Yes, you were.
Trying to learn something about derby besides you have, you know, kind of cool names. And that was the only thing I needed to ask.
We have cool names and we're going really, really fast and turn left, yeah. Right?
I just remember I kept asking, so what are some of the names you guys have on the team? And she was like, huh?
Huh?
She's like, I don't know. We call each other whatever, you know. It's like, really? So what are some of the other cool names you have? And it was just like, well, I didn't know anything else about roller derby. It's like, so you guys skate around?
Yeah, you know? You go around in a circle and you hit each other? Yeah, well, at least you didn't ask the whole question of, you know, I used to watch it when it was on in the 70s on TV, and you used to give each other an elbow right over the balcony thing. And you're like, No. So it was nice not having to field those questions from you. All right, tonight's show is going to be a little different. We had a death in the Derby family locally. It was one of the skaters, her name was Skittles, and she committed suicide. So she is a local lady. Our thoughts and prayers go out to her family and friends. I know she left behind a daughter. And I had some people ask me if I would talk a little bit about suicide and suicide prevention. I used to do this in college. I was trained to answer the suicide hotline prevention phone, and it was really very intense training. But it's something that we need to talk about, because I think this is about the third or fourth suicide I've seen or heard about in roller derby in the last 3 years. And I don't know if that's because roller derby is growing, so a large part of the, you know, you get a large enough portion of the population, someone may be feeling depressed and, you know, suicidal and commit suicide. Or it could be slightly because of we've had a lot more head injuries in roller derby, and, you know, they've actually done a a study in NFL that, you know, enough head injuries causes CTE. CTE can cause suicidal ideation. So it's something that may come up again and probably will. So if you are worried about someone being suicidal, I've got some tips. And do you have any training in this?
I have no training.
I'm glad.
I had a friend whose brother committed mm-hmm. suicide, and it still bothers her.
Oh, of course it would. Yeah. It absolutely. So first thing I'm going to tell you is that if you've had a family member or a friend commit suicide, you have every right to feel any way you want about it. Okay? So, and don't blame yourself, because that person was at a point in his or her life that nothing else made sense. They say people that are feeling suicidal or have suicidal ideas in their head are in a tunnel, and all they can see is the one way out of the tunnel, and that's killing themselves. So don't take that on yourself, and you're allowed to feel any way you want about it. Some of the warning signs for suicide and someone that is feeling suicidal is talking about suicide, not in the abstract like we are, but saying, like, I really think maybe I could kill myself. And not like, I had a really tough day at work, I want to kill myself. You know, that's a joke. But when they talk constantly about it, it's something that you need to start listening for. If they start seeking out access to lethal means, like collecting pills or getting a gun, or, you know, usually women use pills, men use guns. So it's one of those things where you're like, okay, you know, why are they collecting all those pills? Probably, you know, some talk to them about it. If they say they have no hope for the future, a lot of us get stuck in life, you know, really badly. So if they're saying, I don't see any hope or want to continue into the future, that's a big warning sign. getting their affairs in order. Usually people that are planning to commit suicide of some sort are trying to clean up after themselves preemptively. So they're going to be like getting life insurance or putting things away for their friends or giving away all their important items in their house. Like, oh, here, my skates. I'd like you to have my skates. You know, as a skater, that's a big deal. Like, uh-oh, you know, why are they giving away all this stuff? Withdrawing from people and the activities they like doing. So someone that's starting to drop out of roller derby, but dropping out of everything, not just roller derby. Saying goodbye to specific people in a very profound way. Like, I just want to say goodbye. You know, I really appreciated how you treated me, blah, blah, blah. That's suicidal ideation, unfortunately. And suddenly being calm after being very depressed or very, you know, despondent. Suddenly they've come to a decision, and that calmness is the key that they've made that decision. So if you're seeing these warning signs, it is absolutely okay to go to your friend and ask them, hey, I've noticed these things. Are you considering killing yourself? And when I was taught, when we were doing intervention on the phone, never use the word suicide because that's very romantic. So always say, are you considering killing yourself? If you say that, a lot of people are afraid that if you say, are you going to kill yourself? It's going to put the idea in their head and it's going to be their fault. That is not true. Someone who is suicidal is already thinking about it. You didn't put that. You cannot magically make someone suicidal by asking them if they are. So do not feel weird about asking that question, because, you know, you may get the answer, yeah, you know, and then you have a conversation. You have to have that conversation. Or you may get, psh, no, I'm bummed out, but, you know, no. And you'll know the difference. You know, you can tell. let them know that you're there to listen, because people that are in that state don't really need to be lectured. They don't need to be told how awesome life is and that they're being stupid or stubborn or how many people they're going to hurt. They've probably gone over all of those things in their head, but this is the only way out for them. So if they're there to talk, let them talk and just keep them talking. And a lot of people don't know how to just let people talk. So Uncle Paul's practicing it right now. He's practicing reflexive listening. He's looking at me, making eye contact, nodding his head. But yeah, he's letting me talk. And that's very important when you're dealing with someone who's in this state. So let them talk. Ask them if they have a plan and a timeline. If they have a plan, like, yes, I'm going to do it tonight in the next 24 hours. You need to get professional help right away. There's no waiting. If they have a plan and a timeline and it's very specific, the more specific the plan and the timeline are, the more of a chance they are going to do it successfully. So get help, you know, talk to that person. And if you're talking to them and you have to, like, step away from them to get help, like, say I'm in an isolated area where I have to use my cell phone and I'm worried about them doing it right here and now, make a contract with them that they won't do it for, hey, I don't want you to commit suicide. I don't want you to try to kill yourself for the next hour. Is that, you know, promise me, you know, and they most likely will. those are the things you should do. The things you can't do is you cannot promise to that you won't tell anyone that they're suicidal. That's not, you can't. You say, I can't keep this confidential. I will be telling people. I need to tell people that you're in trouble. You know, we need to work this out. Don't promise that you'll fix their problems, because you don't know if their problems are fixable, especially by you, right? Do not argue with them about, like I said, that life is awesome and you're being a jerk. They pretty much feel that way anyway because they're at the lowest point in their life. And finally, don't blame yourself. If they do go through with it, you've tried everything you could do. As long as you got help, talked through and talked it out with them, you know, they may just do it anyway. And that's okay. I mean, it's not okay, but it's not your fault. That is not on you. So those are just some of the things. And if you want to talk about it, you can message me on Facebook or email me. I have more, but I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time with it. And I really feel bad when someone finds this ending to their life and that's the only thing they can think to do. So if you're feeling bad and you are feeling this way, please reach out to people, especially in the Derby community. We're a small Derby community, but we're tight and we're there for each other. All right. Next question for tonight. Merle Pinkins asks, who were the big winners and losers at the Midwest Brouhaha?
Well, about half won, half won. Yeah. I got to watch some of the games on Friday, mm-hmm. and then Saturday we were traveling, but I was checking in.
He was yeah. looking at the car. Everybody was really quiet, and he's over there watching the scores and everything.
And I got to watch part on Sunday mm-hmm. after practice. Doing the, you know, of course, we're right on the bubble. Carolina's right on the bubble, potentially making D2, so mm-hmm. I'm tracking everything.
Yes.
And so I was tracking all those teams because a lot of those teams are either in D2s or right on the edge of being in D2s. So Paradise City was the biggest winner.
Okay, and where are they from?
they're from just north of Sydney. Well, actually, probably a little good ways north of Sydney, I think.
Okay.
In Australia. So they gained the most, you know, rank points. Mm-hmm. They didn't win every game, but they gained the most rank points. And mm-hmm. then Grand Raggedy also mm-hmm. kind of morally and rank point wise, they mm-hmm. were the second biggest.
Good for them.
They had a tough K-Town, which, you know, last year we played them. We beat mm-hmm. them, mm-hmm. Surprised them. And then they came right back and beat the crap out of Lansing yeah, after really that.
They were motivated.
Yeah. They had a bad K-Town tournament mm-hmm. and they lost to a lot of teams they thought they would beat, including us again. Mm-hmm. And they beat Cincinnati. That was a big. They were really happy about that, mm-hmm. and it was a good win for them. They beat Brew City mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. pretty bad. I think they played Bear City also and lost to Bear City, but it was real close. Uh-huh. It was like within 17 points or
yes,
something like that.
Yeah.
And Houston missed their first game. They couldn't make it out
because of the weather, yeah. right? Yeah, the floods.
But they also went up a little bit.
Okay.
But based on where they are, it's not going to affect their rankings as much.
Right.
But they, in terms of who gained the most rank points, it was Paradise City and then Grand Raggedy and, mm-hmm. and Houston. Based on my math. And I'm not an engineer because of my math. That's how much faith you can put in that.
But he's very good at watching those. I mean, Uncle Paul is one of those people that if he likes what he's doing and interested in what he's doing, he becomes an expert pretty darn quickly. So I've noticed that you're very dedicated and you've learned the math of the WFTDA. Mm. So it's not necessarily you know math amazingly well as you know WFTDA math. So that's a good thing. All right, next question. Sabine Grinston Wecker writes, you mentioned a few weeks ago about how West Coast and East Coast Derby is different. Can you talk more about that? Yeah, I was talking about originally we used to have regionals, you know, back in the day. I always say back in the day, but really before 2012 we had regionals. And basically what would happen is, you know, East Coast would play East Coast teams. All the best of the East Coast teams. Everybody would get together and vote and say, oh, we think Carolina is good. We think they're probably fifth. There was no rankings at that point. It was all done by votes. And then people would get together and they'd go, we think on the West Coast, you know, Bay Area is number one. You know, we're going to vote on that. And it was all done pretty much by opinion because there wasn't as much openness with the games that was going, you know, there wasn't as much game broadcasting going on, so you kind of would read about it on Derby News Network and you would kind of be like, oh yeah, well they kicked the crap out of so and so, so we think they're better than they are. And that's how London got in. London was voted in to be in Eastern Regionals, and it was a big controversy because they hadn't played that many WFTDA games. They obviously belong there, but there were like a lot of people were like, I can't believe people are voting for London, you know. So that's part of the reason we have the rank system that we do now, because that voting system just got outdated so very quickly, especially with the foreign teams, like the teams from out of the country. But anyway, it was really funny because you would see these broadcasted games and you would see the East Coast regionals and you'd see how, you know, we would play like we would normally, like, oh, that's normal to us because that's what we played. And then you would see like Northwest or North Central and you'd be like, oh, they play very physically, you know, very rough games. And then you'd see the West Coast and you're like, what are they doing? Like, it's almost completely different derby from what we were doing. And it still happens. Like, we still see regional play, I think.
I do. I mean, we haven't played a lot of West Coast teams. We played Jet City.
Mm-hmm.
And we played Emerald City last year.
Right.
But we've played quite a few Midwest teams.
Yes.
And they are much more physical,
yes,
I think.
Than we are.
They don't wall up as much.
No.
They're just out to make big swings, big hits.
Mm-hmm.
And they're effective with it a bit. I think it is a different style.
I think it is too. Yeah. It takes the old school derby and kind of puts it in with the new school derby. It's kind of interesting. And I think Gotham and Philly for a while, I don't know if Philly's still on this kick, and Charm, we're more like thoughtful derby. Does that make sense? I mean, yeah. It's more thoughtful on the East Coast. It's not necessarily big hits and big, you know, big crazy swings and stuff like that. And even back in the day when that's what it was, it still wasn't the same thing. Carolina's always been statistically a very fast team, no matter what. I mean, we haven't done speed skating in a really long time, and even then, we still are a fast team. We like to run fast. And it's weird because we have all new people practically, and I still see this remnant of we like to run the pack really fast. And some places they want to do very slow pack. You know, I'd say West Coast was a lot slower. They were slowing down Derby a lot quicker than anybody else was, you know. So I think it's really cool that each section has its own version of Derby. And then you can go overseas and they have their own. I mean, look at anything coming out of Victoria. They have, like, you're like, what is that? You know, it's crazy derby, but it's amazing, you know.
I've been able to watch more of the European teams this year as they broadcast more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those teams don't have the history of a lot of the East Coast teams.
Right.
And you can see that they've started out teaching and really focused on the formations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's like you could pick one player and plug it in, and they all know that. They
right.
all know the whatever formation version of the formations that they're using.
What I think is funny is that every once in a while something old comes back into Derby,
yeah.
Like being able to run a pack. And it's funny because the people that have been around like me for a while, that's natural. Like, we're like, okay, let's run. And then the newer people are like,
yeah.
What is this? What are you doing? Right. They weren't there and they don't
understand. That seems to be more of a thing here lately.
It is.
To help break up some of those formations is if you're constantly trying to run the pack a little
exactly.
bit. Then they're like, what? What? No
yeah.
pack? No pack? And they're like, what?
It's really funny though because you see like who has been here and who hasn't. The ones that are like, oh yeah, I'll run. You know, no problem. Let's run together. You know, it's funny. And you're like, well, should I spend a lot of time teaching the newer people that, or do we work on, you know, the formation itself? You know, it gets to the point where you're like, is that a trick that we're pulling out, or, you know?
I mean, it wasn't a trick before, though, right?
It kind of was. It didn't start out that way, but the first time I saw someone run a pack was Rose City did it against Carolina, and it was during a power jam, and Carolina was like, this is back in 2010 at ECDX, and Carolina was like, what do? Our jammers just running and they're just running at the pack, and we were like, what do? You know, and we're like, I don't know. You know, the All-Stars hadn't figured it out yet, and it was very effective against us. It killed every power jam against Rose City, and you could tell everybody was pissed about it, so they're gonna figure it out. They figured it out. All right, next question. What things do players do to frustrate you in roller derby as a coach? You can use me as an example.
You know, I told you I didn't have a lot of time to think about a lot of these ahead of time. But, you know,
sure.
One thing that comes to mind is not taking care of their equipment or not testing their equipment.
Yes.
And so you show up at a bout, and it's all of them are important, especially if they're sanctioned.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have the right wheels for the floor.
Okay.
Or you don't have the tools to change your wheels
yes.
for the floor.
Yes.
So I'm going to have to skate on these because I don't have the tool to change them out.
Yeah. Or you don't have, you get there and your toe stops all wonky and it is continuously wonky throughout the game and it falls out like three times
yeah.
and you're a jammer, you know?
Right. And it was doing that for the past 2 months
yeah.
at practice.
Yeah.
And you had a chance to do something about it.
Right.
You know, so equipment issues, jerseys, not having jerseys,
oh,
and
yeah.
things like that is frustrating because it throws a lot of extra stress on an already potentially stressful situation.
So being prepared
yeah.
is a good way.
That's all under your control,
right.
is to be prepared. Right. And being a Boy Scout, I mean, that's part of our motto. It's just, that's the way I was brought up, is just
right.
like, these are easy things
right.
you can think about ahead of time.
Right.
That's why we don't have to go gather nuts to survive the winter, is because we can store them, build a storehouse for all of our
Well, and crazies. here's my thing, and this has been a pet peeve of mine. It has nothing to do with coaching, but I feel like women in general don't want to be mechanically inclined. Not all of them. There are obviously exceptions to the rule, but there are many women out there that are skaters, right? And they don't know. They've never looked at the bottom of their skates. They could have had those skates for 5 years. Yeah. They've never changed anything out. They've never looked at their, you know, oh, hey, is that pivot cup still even in there? You know, oh, wow, is that, you know, how about those bushings? How are they doing? You know, all this stuff they've never looked at because they just, either they don't want to because it doesn't even cross their minds because they've never been trained, or they're afraid to because they don't want to mess up their skates, and they don't, it's sort of, it gets superstitious, sort of like, oh, I've always skated like this, I don't want to change anything, right? And they're afraid they'll put it back wrong, or they just are like, that's not my job. You know, I'm like, well, we're not NASCAR, we don't have a pit crew, you got to kind of take care of your skates, you know, so... Mm-hmm. I'd really like to see more female skaters step up and really maintain their skates in a good way. And there's plenty of videos on YouTube how to take your skates apart, clean them, you know, clean your bearings, change your wheels, you know, test the nuts on your skates. All of those things are on YouTube. It's not like you have to do this by yourself, you know. Or, you know, grab someone that does it yeah. and say, can you help me with it? And or if you're really scared and you're taking apart your skates, take pictures. We all have cell phones now that you can just take random pictures and not worry about wasting the film and all that. Here you go. Take a picture for every step as you take your skates apart so you can put it back the way you found it. I mean, don't be afraid of this stuff. Skates are very simple machines. You should be able to take them apart.
Most of the skaters I'm thinking about, though, know how to take them apart.
They just don't?
They just don't, or they don't keep the tools to do it.
Okay, the tools are...
Or they don't bring... They don't have the wheels.
No, that's a different story. Some people don't have wheels. They're broke. You know, they're flat broke. I try to bring extra wheels with me that have bearings in them for people because I know some of my teammates have financial issues. I get that. So I try to help out when I can. But for the most part, people don't ask me for stuff. So, you know, I'll help. I can help by, like, looking at your thing and seeing what the problem might be. But until you take it apart, you really need to learn all that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think most people know how to take their skates apart. I think they know how to change their wheels. That's probably all they know how to do.
Another frustrating thing is, skaters that say, I really, really want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they have an opportunity to do it...
They don't do it.
They well, not right now. Not right, right now. No, let someone else do
so
it.
So a good
right
example
now.
Is jamming in a game.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That could be it.
That could be it. Yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, I think... I know that when I was new at skating and it was faster derby, I was a jammer. And honest to God, I did not want to jam. Like, I really didn't want to jam. I had no... luxury, like there was no love for it. There are people that are out there that love jamming. They think jamming is great. They love it. They think there's glory in it. They think it's exciting. Mm-hmm. I hate jamming. I've always hated it. So when I was put out there, it's always been a labor, not love. And I've never been like, I'd really like to jam in this game. Mm-mm. I'd really like to, if I'm stuck jamming, I'd like to try to jump the apex maybe, or, you know, do something cool, but that's never going to happen. So for me, it's important to like, know that's a thing with me. Like, I know that's a problem. I think some people don't realize they have that same love-hate relationship with jamming that I do. I just verbalize mine, and I've been around long enough to understand it. I think some people think, no, they really secretly love it, and they're going to be secretly amazing at it, but don't put too much pressure on them, you know?
Well, it also happens naturally. It's also, I mean, certain things on the track that are frustrating. It's just like, you know... We've played some tough teams, and I've seen it not just on our team but others. When you're having a hard time, you know, rather than just saying, okay, bad jam or bad pass.
Put it back. Yeah.
Just get together. We'll try to stop her on this pass or this next jam. It's just like you just stop completely and then you start blaming each other and then the bench falls apart or something like that. And that just compounds it. It makes it worse. And for a coach – that is extremely frustrating.
I'll
it's
bet.
Like you take one mistake and you turn it into mistake after mistake after mistake, yep. And that's very frustrating.
Yeah, I really try to think to myself what's next regardless of what's happened out there. No one's 100% successful at that, but I do try. Like, okay, she got through. What's next? Like, we have to regroup. Let's regroup and figure this out. Especially when it's usually during a power jam when that's something like that happens, or our jammer's stuck in the pack. Those are stressors, right? You know, we're trying to get our jammer out or our jammer's off the track. Those are things that make teams upset and stressed out. So during those times, I'm like, look, you know, every small victory is a victory anyway. Like, oh, we held her for 30 seconds. That's a great victory on a power jam. Yeah. That's like, woo, that's almost the entire power jam. So
I would say smarty pants more than probably mm-hmm. just about any other player I see.
She just gets right back to
it. Yeah. You know, if she's not perfect, she makes a lot of mistakes, mm-hmm. but it, you know, if the jammer gets by or something happens to their wall, I mean, she doesn't freak out. She doesn't mm-hmm. turn to the ref. She doesn't yell at her teammates. She just gets right back in and you know, plays the best she can on the next pass. Mm-hmm. And that's Sexy Slady. I see that in Sexy Slady. She doesn't revenge hit or anything mm-hmm. like that. She hits hard.
Yeah.
But and aggressively, mm-hmm. but she doesn't revenge hit.
No.
Where before she was doing a very good job of position blocking, now she starts swinging at mm-hmm. jammers and mm-hmm. and it makes it easier on some of them.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that just takes time and patience and trust. You know, we were talking about synergy on the track on the way home from the game this weekend, and I think those things have to come into play too. Like, do you trust your teammates? Do you trust that they're there and they're present on the track? Sometimes I trust my teammates, but there are some days where they're not having a great game or I'm not having a great game and one of us is not present on the track. So do you trust them to be present? Do you trust them to come back to you? You know, and I think that's where it's very important, you know, to trust and to know that they're going to be there for you. And then you don't make as many of those mistakes. Or at least you don't panic. And it's hard. All right. What has been the change that has helped you most when it comes to roller derby this year?
The change.
Yeah, like have you done something different?
Well, as a coach, I've made my practice outlines a lot more structured.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, something we were working on a little bit last year, but this year I kind of picked a structure that I like for practice mm-hmm. and makes it easier to make adjustments within that structure. You know, they talk about creativity. If you mm-hmm. have a little structure to it, then that allows you to get more creative.
And absolutely.
Kind of knowing what the basic outline structure is. If I don't have a lot of time to prep, then I've already got a structure in place. It makes it easy to come up with things. Or if mm-hmm. I see something that we're not doing well in the first part of practice, it mm-hmm. makes it easy to make adjustments to structure the remainder. From a strategy standpoint mm-hmm. or something, you know, we changed one of our blocking formations a mm-hmm. little bit because we were continuing to struggle with, you know, the different levels that we have mm-hmm. even on the All-Star team and making our walls effective with mixed blocking skill levels.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were trying a formation one night and it just seemed it made all skill levels look much more equal.
Right.
And we were like, that's why don't we start using this?
Mm-hmm.
And so is it the best one for all situations?
No.
No.
No, but I think it helps generally.
Yeah.
And it does help overall with our games.
You know, a lot of people I've heard talk about, and we've talked about on this show, you know, you have to find a formation or you have to find derby that works for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So even if you're talking whether it's West Coast, Midwest, a general style of derby or mm-hmm. different formations, some people flat four wall. I heard announcers last year just constantly going after Bay Area for sticking with the flat four wall.
And it like, was you working. Know,
it works for them.
Yeah,
they
it
do
really
it
was.
Well. They train it well. Their skaters learn it. They come and they execute it well.
Yeah.
So why give them grief about it? Is it perfect in all situations? Is it what everyone else is doing? No.
Right.
But they're still ranked in the top 10 or 20, you know, top 15 with that.
Exactly. I think, well, and I think people, announcers and fans and so on, we forget when it comes down to playoffs, this is the best of the best. And so maybe it doesn't work against Gotham. Maybe it doesn't work against Victoria, you know, but it works against all of the other players, you know, all the other teams that they've played. You know, calm down. Is it going to be their best thing to do? Well, maybe for them it is. You know, that is their strength. You know, and maybe their jammers can handle the formations without, you know, dealing with the four wall. So who knows? I agree with you. Whatever works for the team needs to work for the team.
Well, and along those lines, another thing that we've made great progress on this year, I think, is that we're able to, you know, one of the goals last year was to be able to put, like, use the formation we want to use mm-hmm. or use the strategy that we want to use. Like, you know, 1 week we play Ohio and we want to use this strategy.
Right.
2 weeks later we play Ann Arbor and we want to use this strategy. Mm-hmm. And not have people so rigidly locked in to, well, this is what we do. This is right. how we play. I play in position four. Mm-hmm. She plays in position one. Every time you reform your wall, you go to position one and this person mm-hmm. goes to position four. And I only go out and align with these people. And we've made a lot of progress in being able to put just about anyone out there to work with each other in mm-hmm. whatever lineup or situation, using whatever formation, based on what we're noticing ahead of time. So we're with the way we're practicing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Say on this jammer we want to use this formation. On this jammer we might want to use a different formation. Mm-hmm. We might want to use this blocking lineup. In the very next lineup we're going to take one person out and put a different mm-hmm. person in. And we're not there yet.
Right.
We're that flexible.
But we are getting more flexible.
But we're moving in that direction.
Yeah.
And that makes it tough to, it gives us a lot of flexibility, right? To do what we need to do based on the situation and what we're noticing the other team doing.
And it makes it harder to read us, too, because you can see footage of us in one game and we're doing one thing, and you can see footage of us in another game and we're using something different.
Yeah.
And, I think that's helpful, and I think we've become much more flexible because we, you know, I mean, let's face it, like 2-3 years ago, we really didn't have much of a strategy. We had some. We didn't have what we have now. We have, like, a whole complex structure now, and it's kind of cool. It's very great that you've been here to help us solidify that, because I don't think we would have without you. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I don't think we would have. The change for me that's helped me the most when it comes to roller derby is just being really good at working with a wall. Like, that's hard for me, or it was hard for me. You know, I was really good at holding a line, and then I had to learn how to work with a wall and being able to shut the door and leave that line and hope that someone else takes that line. Like, be more fluid in the wall. And I think that's helped me out a lot.
And I think your jamming is one of the biggest things, too.
Yeah, without your tips, I wouldn't have been anywhere nearly as effective as a jammer as I've been.
Well, that's something I've seen. You know, we realized we had a problem with offense. Mm-hmm. We had, you know, we wanted better offense. And we realized, too, that no one from Team USA was going to come transfer in.
They weren't, and I don't know why. Raleigh's a really great place to live. All of you people out there, Raleigh is amazing.
It took me weeks to figure that one out. I don't know why.
And where I live in Apex, it's the number one small town to live in the country. So, you know what? Come and move down with us.
But a very good byproduct of that is we started training everyone mm-hmm. to jam. And so everyone has gotten better at jamming, mm-hmm. much better at jamming. So whatever level they started out, I would say everyone's doubled it, really. I mean, everyone's gotten much better.
We're taking it to 11.
Yeah.
At least for us. But, it's true. I still hate jamming, though.
Yeah, but I've seen that a lot of the girls who were strictly blocking, don't mm-hmm. get that jammer panty anywhere near me, don't even give me the pivot panty, because I could end up with it, potentially. Right. No pivot panty. Now are like, hey, I'll be the pivot.
Yeah.
I'll be pivot, you know, and hey, give it to me. Give it, you know, I'll go out and jam.
Yep. Well, we're more confident in it.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I feel like before we would find these people that I would call them natural jammers. Like, they were just naturally jammers. I have no idea how they did what they did. You know, we had like Holly Winnicracky. That girl was just like designed to be a jammer. You know, we had all these people that were really good natural jammers. But they couldn't translate what they were doing out there to train anyone else. It was just sort of like, well, you must be born that way, you know? And now it's like, oh, no, wait, there's tricks. Yeah, this person might be a really much better skater than I am.
There's skills.
Yeah. But I got it. I can see that what their deal is now. Like, I can see what they're doing. I may never be able to.
Well, and you said it makes you a better blocker, too.
Oh, it makes me a much better blocker because I know what they're doing. Like, I know how they think, which is really nice. And I feel bad for our jammers, you know, but I do know how they're going to approach a wall. You know, what they do in the clinch is their personal skating style, but I know what they're like you know, their thought processes are. Even when we play other teams, I see it. Like, I know what they're doing. They're doing, they run patterns, just like everybody else, just like blockers do. So it's kind of cool. All right. Next question is from Anonymous. Why do so many players in Derby seem to have a disconnect between their actual skill level and where they see themselves, where they see that they see themselves? Why do you think that is? That's called the Kruger-Dunning effect, I believe, or Dunning-Kruger. Yes, I think it's people that think they're amazing and they're not, but I don't know. Let me look it up. Yep, Dunning-Kruger.
Well, I think part of it is too, it's you're insulating yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's what I was going to say, that you're surrounding yourself by your league or your team.
I mean, it's self-esteem related. Mm-hmm. I mean, even people with like high self-esteem,
mm-hmm.
They reject fault, or they reject. What you have to be careful of is that you don't do it too unwarranted, because then you don't really address the problem. Mm-hmm. If there's a problem, you don't work on the skill you need to develop. But you know I've heard stories about, you know, they talk about fighter pilots where you build them up to the point where nothing they do is
nothing's wrong. Yeah.
Right. I mean. That's why they have the confidence that they have. Because,
right.
And you think about jamming. So some of the skills we worked on, one we were working on last night, you were like, yeah, I'd like to see someone do that and take a hit.
Well, no, I actually said I want to take a hit while doing this, because honestly, that's part of the reason I don't. We were doing the, like, just where it was slightly risky of coming around a pack. And I said, you know, I don't know if I'd ever put myself in this situation, because I'm afraid. I've never been hit this way. I don't think I'd ever do it until I knew that I could survive the hit. You know, basically, I would like to see myself go through that hit and know that I can live through it. Mm-hmm. I think that's what stops me from doing something quote-unquote fancy as a jammer, is that I don't think I can survive it. I mean, I can survive it, but I don't think I could, like, come back from it and be like, oh, I'm never doing that again. You know what I mean? So, like, that's why I am a meat and potatoes jammer. I don't want to jump the apex, because I don't want to get knocked out of the sky and, you know, have to start at ground zero. Those are the things that keep me from doing those things.
Or you can see some jammers that constantly go to the lines,
right?
And
because they found some success,
and a lot of them, they're high level jammers, and they're doing that, and you know they've been told don't do that, right? And it could be just like, okay, you could look at that and you could say, well, they're just not facing reality, or they're saying, no, this is how I jam. This is how I'm success. You can say whatever you want to me. It's not going to change. It's not
going
to change what
I
do.
Well, I call people that repeat the same, not mistakes, but risky behavior, and they're like, but I'm successful at it. I call them gamblers, because it's like gamblers are like, but I made $20 last week. Well, how much did you lose, you know, prior to that? And I wonder if that's part of the same kind of thought process that's going into that.
Sometimes I want to say I see that. In some people, especially if they really want to jam and they're just not there, or, you know, it's just not happening for them. Or it can be, you know, it could be a blocker too. There's some that say, I really want to block, but they're much better as jammers.
Yep. But I think it's just funny, because, like, I'll see people, they're like, but I always get through on the line. And I'm like, yeah, but the five times you didn't get through, you just didn't remember them or something. Mm. You know what I mean? I think it's weird.
Sometimes, you know, so like in this situation, it could be like, you know, I haven't kicked a soccer ball in probably more years than I actually played soccer.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, I could still go out there and do that. But the reality is probably not anywhere close to that. So,
right.
Yeah, I still have some residual muscle memory maybe, or skills, but... You know, if I actually went out and started training for it, I'd have to get a healthy dose of reality again.
I don't think a healthy dose of reality is a bad thing, but I do worry that there are some people that it's like you can give them a healthy dose of reality by saying, hey, you know, you have this habit, don't do this, or, you know, maybe avoid that, or, you know, whatever. And they just don't listen. And that's where I think the disconnect comes in.
Yeah, and so I would say it could be defensive.
Right.
But if they really want to get better,
they'll listen.
Listen to it, and then you have to decide for yourself internally: do I accept this criticism or do I reject it?
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how it comes, it could come as screaming or yelling, or it could come as very friendly
or like,
very
hey.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, hey, here's a tip. No matter how it comes, you still have to decide whether you accept it or reject it.
I agree with that.
If you really want to get better, then you probably, I would say, try to accept all criticism and then weigh it against your own expertise, your own knowledge about yourself and what you're trying to do, mm-hmm. and what you've learned in the past, and say, will this help me get better?
Or will it?
Or should I just reject this?
Or put it to the side. Like, yeah. I feel like I've been given over my career lots and lots of feedback from people. And I'm not even saying criticism. It's just feedback, you know, how people approach the game and what they think and how they do things. And sometimes I'm able to take that in because I understand where they're coming from and I get what they're talking about. And sometimes I really don't, I can't make a connection to what they just said. Like, they're just on a different plane, and I don't know what is going on. So I kind of put it to a side. And the first time that happened to me, Holly Winokrakia, one of our really good jammers back in the day, she just looked at me. We were both on the jam line at a practice, and she goes, "Never hesitate." She took off in the pack, and I'm like, "Screw you, Holly Winokrakia. You know, you're amazing at this." And I realized what she was saying was, you know, see those openings and go for them. Don't sit and waste time thinking, is this going to be effective? Is, you know, should I do that? You know, she didn't have that doubt. She just would go for it. Even if it wasn't successful going for it, she still was taking the chance and going for those openings quickly, you know, as fast as she could. She'd see a hole and she'd be there. Whether or not she made it through or not was different. And she was trying to tell me that in her own way. And I was like, I can't even fathom what you just said to me because I'm so wrapped up in my things, you know. But later, 2 years later, I was like, I get it, you know.
Well, especially if it's coming to you in practice, in a practice situation, practice it. I mean, there are a lot of drills we run at practice where everyone is looking at me like,
yep.
I would never do this.
You're like, what the
I would never
this?
Do this. Yep. What is this? Yeah. This is not what you said it was going to be. Why are we practicing this? This makes no sense. And then a couple people, you can see, it might be like, oh, that makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start doing it and using it, and they start getting better. And then someone else goes, maybe we go back and practice that thing again?
Yep.
You know, and some things we practice just never make sense to anyone until later on.
Right.
Maybe, you know, there's some things we talked about last year and tried to do that it didn't make sense until this year.
Yeah. So. I think that's funny, but yeah, you're right. All right, here's another question. Curious how many teams have captains write and run practices and how many have dedicated coaches along with captains. The benefits versus the drawbacks of that. Well, I can tell you, Carolina has, we've had really great coaches that have been dedicated to us, and then they've fallen along the wayside, not because they left angry or something, but, you know, they were probably married to someone in the league or dating someone in the league, and that person retired, so they kind of disappeared. And for a while, we had to really rely on ourselves to come up with drills, practices, so captains or training director or, gosh, anybody that wanted to take it up was the person that had to do it. And that's mixed success, you know, because you're making decisions for the team that you don't necessarily feel comfortable with making. Like, maybe you're not the person that likes to practice, you know, do lesson plans or practice plans or whatever, and you're just responding to what the team wants. Or you're actually seeing stuff that other people are doing in other teams, or you've gone to a training and you really want to bring that stuff back, and some people, you know, they fight you on it because they weren't there. So it always makes you feel, I think there's always, when a captain or just a skater is doing the lesson or the practice plan, there's always a little bit of a, well, what do they know that I don't know, and why are we doing this, you know, from the other skaters. And it helps to have a coach and a training group come up with a practice.
I mean, I haven't been to a lot of other teams' practices where they have captains or skater coaches running. I've been to a few, but like warm-ups that I see for teams, I saw a few at Beach Brawl last year. I've seen some at State Wars, mm-hmm. Battle of the All-Stars, where it's kind of a skater coach type, mm-hmm. leading the warm-ups. And a lot of times they're the higher level skaters on the team. They're mm-hmm. the more knowledgeable. They've been around longer. That's probably why they're captain.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone seems to respect them. I haven't seen a lot of pushback, especially in those situations. I mean, you're right before a game, you won't see that pushback. But it's
the day to day stuff that I think people get a little bit. Yeah. Not all the time.
I think it depends on the league, though.
Yes.
It depends on your situation. It depends mm-hmm. on the league. Depends on the players that you have.
And it depends on who's leading. You know, we've taken turns, and sometimes people are like, I can't believe we're doing all this crap, or I'm angry because we're doing a toe stopless practice. You know, like, we got a lot of pushback on the toe stopless practices that we used to do. And a lot of skaters were like, I'm not taking my toe stops out. You can go to hell. We're like, okay, guess you won't get the benefit from this, you know. But, I mean, we have some very outspoken people on our team, and they'll let you know if they don't like what's going on. So I prefer not to have it, you know, because you're kind of, you're peer on peer at that point. Even if you're a captain, you're still peer on peer.
You had shared about the story about Rose, about how they announce their rosters, where they want the coach to announce the roster a month in advance.
Yes.
So that any blow-ups can happen, and the captains can be the ones to calm them down and be with them and still be, you know, on the track with them and function as a team, as a unit.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it just depends on what's going on. We are very lucky right now because we have a very dedicated coach. You're an incredibly dedicated coach. Not all leagues have that. You know, not all teams have that. So, you know, I think you got to do what works for you. Carolina has done coaches. We've done skater coaches. We've done captains running practices. We've done training directors running practices. I mean, it really just comes down to, do you need a practice? Do you need it run? You know, how are you going to get this? How are you going to get this working? How are you going to make it work for your league? So the benefits and the drawbacks are depending on what, you know, what's happening in your league at the time.
Yeah. I would say I see a lot of teams where it looks like the skaters actually run practice and the coaches are just there on game day.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the coaches, I don't see a lot of, you know, a lot of the male coaches are just kind of, they're there.
Yes.
And if you look at what's actually being coached, who's calling lineups, who's saying things to the skaters on the track, it's the skater coaches a lot of times.
I would hope that, you know, every team has a coach that at least is familiar with what the strategy is, and the players at that point, because a coach really does change the dynamic and can change the dynamic of what's happening on the track. Like, because coach is putting out people at a certain time in a certain situation, I think that can change the game. You know, coach calls a timeout at the right time. Coach, you know, argues a point at the right time. Those are all things that coaches should be very good at. And note, the first start of that is knowing your team. And if so, if you're not at practices, I don't know why you're out there at a game. I mean, I feel like you need to know the people you're coaching. You can't just walk in and be like, I'm a guest star, you know?
It makes it hard.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's hard to contribute, really.
Yeah, I mean, right.
If you're just there to tell or when to call it.
Yeah, who cares?
They can do that by themselves for the most part.
We certainly hope so. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, I think a coach is a lot more important than people think it is. The position is a lot more important. I think you have to be there at practices. I think you have to be involved in things that are going on. You can't just show up when you feel like it to be a good coach. You know, to be a great coach, you're there all the time. I think your attendance is better than most people's in the league.
That's how I got to be coach. Really? I mean, that's what the captain said to me at that time. It's like, you're here more than most of our skaters. Yep. Why don't you help us coach?
Yep. Kind of sad. Yeah. All right, next question. We'll be at my very first derby practice either tomorrow or Monday. I've never skated before, but bladed, so I am absolutely excited to try this and meet some amazing and empowering women and men. Any pointers for a first day on skates?
Don't try to do it all at once.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean,
because you're going to get hurt. Probably.
And find someone who's not like, hey, try this. It should be someone who's a good trainer.
Yeah.
And work and buddy up to that person, not the one that's
not the crazy.
Looks like she's doing something amazing, and hey, I want to learn how to do that. Can you tell me how you did that?
Right.
Find the person who teaches new skaters how to skate and buddy up to that person.
Yeah. I think you should watch what's going on at practice too. Like, you know, you should definitely be a skater and you should be skating as much as possible, but really pay attention to what's going on because you can figure out what the league's like, your team's like. I mean, all teams have different personalities. You're going to learn a little bit about the culture of your team as you watch them practice. Like, certain people are going to dress out in certain places. You know, they're going to get changed in certain places. Certain people are going to be on the floor, you know, doing certain things, you know, before the warm-ups start. Certain people are going to stand next to each other. I mean, these are all things, if you're joining any group of people, including roller derby team, it's like, you know, be an anthropologist for a while. Watch the culture of the team around you because you may step on someone's toes by accident. that you had no idea that you were stepping on their toes. We had a girl, I love her to pieces, her name's Bob, Bianca Oblivion, and she had a seating chart where you got dressed, all right? Like, so certain people sat on this, and we had mushrooms, that's what we called them. Certain people sat on the pink mushroom. Certain people sat on the blue mushroom. We were sitting on the green mushroom. I sat on the green mushroom. She had everybody written down in a damn seating chart. So if new people came in and sat in someone's spot, she was like, you're sitting in the wrong spot. And that would be the first thing that, you know, she would say to them. Well, you know.
I would say, where's your spot? I'll go sit there.
Man, that would have made her crazy. But, I mean, it's one of those things where you have to know the culture of your team, and you want to, if you want to fit in smoothly, one of the things you have to be aware of is the hierarchy of crazy, because there is hierarchy of crazy. Like, some people don't give a shit about that stuff. Some people would get mad if you got in their way on the track. Some people would be mad if you didn't join in everything. Some people would be mad if you joined in everything. So, you know, it's good to know your culture, though.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
you're joining a team, whether it's a good fit or not. That's going to be up to you and the team. But,
I mean, yeah. You're either there, but, you know, a lot of teams, you're there to skate, right?
I agree
you're
with
there
that.
To skate.
I agree with that.
So, maybe you join the wrong team if they're concerned about seating charts.
Well,
you know?
But that's what I'm going to say, is that there are some people that join teams because this is the only team in the area. But if you are in a situation where you have several different teams to pick from, there may be a better fit for you, you know? And some people are like, I've been working really hard trying to stick in with this team. There's a more competitive team, you know, a couple of miles further out, and I want to be more competitive. Well, that's you've outgrown the one team, and you're going to the other. I mean, it happens. And it happens with sitting, you know, the seating chart maybe thing. You just can't handle that. You're like, this is stupid. I'm going to leave. Or, you know, this team is asking me to do, like, 6 more hours of volunteer work a month than this team is. You know, those are all things you have to take into account, but you have to learn your culture. And that's, you know, for me, Carolina was the only team that was close by. Like, so I had to fit into that culture or I had to leave roller derby. You know, and that's fine. I mean, that's a choice too, right? Maybe you find out you don't really like it. You balance for a little bit.
I mean, really, if it's your first time on skates, you want your first many
times.
Well,
it's her first time on quads.
Okay.
She's a blader.
Yeah.
So it's her first time on quads. And they are different.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just going to have to learn that your edges will be different. They'll be wider.
So, you know, so Danny was Slim's at Slim's going away party. He started out on inlines there. And they, like, changed. So about halfway through, he changed
to quads.
And it was different for him. Mm-hmm. You could tell. Mm-hmm. But they were helping him.
The stride's different.
Yeah.
Like when same from ice skating. So you go from an ice skating. So yeah, quad stride is different than the. Even when we speed skate practice, the guys in quads and the guys on blades had different. They would talk to you about it. They'd be like,
well so then if this person is fairly experienced blade skater, then I would say
their edges are probably going to be amazing in roller derby. So that's good.
But not try to do too much.
Yeah, still. It's a different kind of skating. Yeah. So,
but you'll probably pick it up quick.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So, especially if you were a hockey skater. Yeah. That'll be amazing. I wish I had had a chance to be in a hockey skater because, man, that would be a great derby skater now. All right, next question. Okay, I'm looking for a drill activity, something to help improve direction of gameplay calls. Like, approximately 20% of the population. Okay, I'm totally making that up, but it makes me feel less alone, damn it. I have no sense of direction at all. North is always ahead of me on the track. This translates me to getting particularly lost in relationship to the rest of the track and not being able to accurately judge when I'm crossing the direction of gameplay line. When I turn to the inside, it's a little better because I can use the track, inside track to orient myself. Still not great, but better. But when I turn to the outside, I tend to get all out of whack, and I can't find the 90-degree line I should not skate past. So I figure there is a super smart person who has come up with a drill to help those whose internal compasses are demagnetized, right? Please help.
I almost never see a skater naturally turn to the outside.
Right.
I mean, anytime we're watching footage of someone preparing for a team. I mean, you just watch it. Everyone naturally is turning.
Well, I mean, you're trained. Yeah. You know, you're trained to cross over to that direction anyway, so our bodies are naturally turning that way. So I think that's why we naturally turn to the inside. So, I mean,
This is a little hard for me to, because I have a pretty good sense of
direction. Yeah.
You know, thinking about this though, it's stay facing forwards. Really, okay, I mean that sounds like very commonsensical. It's just like
I was going to suggest the same thing.
Learn to block and stay facing forwards, and that way you know if that's your north, right? Mm-hmm. If it's always in front of you, then always stay in a derby because you're taking away the legal hitting zone.
That's what I was going to say.
From the jammer, and a lot of drills, a lot of skills are designed to get you back in a facing forwards direction, even though a lot of girls immediately want to turn around and face back so they can see what's going on.
Sure.
You don't necessarily need to do that, especially in a wall.
Right.
Learn to block facing forward or stay facing forward as much as possible.
I was going to say the same thing, because if you're having not a hard time with the inside line, you know, using that as a reference because you can see it out of the corner of your eye, whatever, and you can't always see the outside line depending where you are on the track because, you know, on the curves it gets a little weird on turns. So what I would suggest is you stay forward and become an amazing booty blocker, because that you won't go the wrong way if you're booty blocking. If you're always putting your butt on someone, you can't go. You won't be turning back, you know, and it's so important to be able to be a decent booty blocker. I was looking over pictures, you know, the time hop feature or whatever, memories on Facebook. I was looking at a game from 2010, and every single person was booty blocking because that's all you could do. We didn't turn around and give someone your chest. I mean, that would be unthinkable, right? And every single person was really good at, you could tell they were good at booty blocking in this game because they were just passing them back and forth. You know, here's a jammer, you take the jammer for a little bit, I'll take her back, let's take them over here. And, you know, everybody's plows were really in great shape. You could just see it. You know, there was half of them didn't have toe stops in. They had, you know, jam plugs in, so we didn't use toe stops, a lot of us. And I was like, oh my God, you know, that really was the day that this was normal behavior, and now you don't see that as much, right? You see some very good booty blockers, and they're almost like out of the ordinary because you're like, wow, she's not turning around at all. She's just booty blocking the whole time.
We have used chalk or cones to try to work on some of this, because especially in the turns, if you're working on certain skills, you have a tendency to get direction, or what looks like direction, because of the way the turn goes. And then in some drills, you know, a lot of jammers like to disengage and step back. And so you'll find, I'll watch some drills, you'll start at, say, at the jammer line, and you'll wind back up almost near the apex at turn 3 and 4 over the course of the drill, just because of the way the play is progressing. And you know, you tell people, watch, practice on a line. Or again, use chalk or something like that, where you can practice some of your skills and drills that you're doing, and then not worry about it, and then look and see where you actually are at some point.
Well,
look down and see, okay,
I was gonna
where
say,
am
have
I
a friend,
to that line?
You know, phone a friend. To have someone sitting there while you're doing the drill on the outside line and say, telling you when you're starting to go that extra, you know, past the 90-degree mark. You can have someone there going, you're past the 90-degree mark, so your muscle memory starts kicking in, and then you don't do that.
Yeah.
I think that's something that can be very helpful. It's got to be someone you trust that they can see it too, or a ref, you know, if your ref's at the practices.
Well, speaking of refs, I mean, a lot of them like to maintain the same position in relation to the action that's going on in the track. And so sometimes watching if you're more inclined to watch the inside, finding the inside ref where they like to line up, or a lot of the outside refs are going to line up even right with the line, or or they're going to line up at almost like 45-degree angle so they can look for multiplayer on there, and they're going to kind of bracket in where the perpendicular line is based on, because they will maintain their relative position as they skate on the track, so they can, it's just where they're comfortable, where they're taught, and where they like to look for penalties. So,
you can
follow the ref. I can say, okay, well, I know the ref based on where the ref is about. They're trying to maintain their relationship to the action on the track.
Well, and I think it's funny too. There's some spaces where they have to offset the track to make it fit into the space. Like Greensboro's practice space is one of these places. And every once in a while, I am one of those people that uses outside cues to figure out where I am on the track. Like, I'll be looking at the wall, and I'm like, oh, the wall's parallel to the straightaway. Well, it's not at Greensboro. Yeah. So occasionally I find myself like, oh, crap, where the hell am I? Because it's offset by, like, 20 degrees or something. And I'm just like, wow, that can really mess you up. It can really mess you up. So I'm wondering if this person has a practice space that is offset. like where they have to offset it from the wall, and you get this like weird like disconnect between straight lines.
I mean, you look at some of the surfaces and courts that they play on in New Zealand and in some of the ones in Japan and some of the ones in Europe, where they have, they're designed to play basketball on, volleyball. I mean, they've got like 40 different colored lines on there, and you're trying, even I'm watching it.
You're watching the video.
And I'm trying to figure out where are the derby lines on there. How do they know where the derby lines are?
I don't know.
And that would be good practice.
I have no idea. And I got to tell you, that is pretty amazing, because I couldn't do it. I'd be like, what? You know, I remember being at, we were up playing Roanoke one year, and they had offset the track the wrong way, so they had it painted, and then they had to come in and fix it. So I was following the original line, and I was getting, like, cutting the track, because I was following the line, you know, out of the corner of my eye, and I was like, you know, it was the same color. I had no idea which was the real track at that point, you know?
Were you out of time?
Almost.
Okay.
You want to...
Well, I was just going to say one more thing real quick. It's just like the study with the kids and the marshmallows. If you have, where they tell, you know, they have the little kid and they say...
Oh, you can keep a marshmallow or
is to don't eat this one, and when I come back, I'll bring you the whole bag. Yeah. And you got kids that will eat it immediately and lick it and do all this. So a lot of times, the skaters I see that have trouble with clockwise or direction play... is those are the kids
they're
that probably ate the marshmallow. And I'm like, it's like they can't wait for the jammer to get to the wall. And so what I would say, if you're having trouble with that, just lick the person next to you. and get the whole marshmallow when the marshmallow comes into the line.
Oh, my God.
That might help.
Don't lick anybody on derby. You'll get MRSA. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you wasted another hour listening to Q's Tips. This episode is brought to you by... SweatX. Let's face it, Derby boys and girls, your gear stink, and that stinks, and that makes you stink. SweatX gets out all the bad bacteria that causes stink while killing 99.9% of the MRSA and staph infection viruses. SweatX has no dermal impact, so no worrying about allergic reactions caused by other detergents. We also have the stain remover spray for the marker and blood stains on your jerseys. Hopefully not too much blood, but it does work really well on the markers, because my white jersey is actually white because of this stuff. An odor eliminator spray for your skates, helmets, and bags that can't go in the wash. I also sprayed JoJo's gear last night with the odor stuff because her gear is getting a little gamey. So it smells much better now. All right, call Susan at Derby City Skates. And she's on vacation this week, but her number is 704-258-7603. And order yours now. And also check out our Facebook page, SweatX for Roller Derby. Thanks for coming tonight, Uncle Paul.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and we really appreciate it. And tune in next week. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.